Hi, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Diz, Dizzy Gillespie, that is. And here comes the cunt. Look at
Ah, yes, a voice from the past, my old friend. That really was Dizzy Gillespie from the old days. He and I used to hang around together up near Chicago. Well, welcome back here in the second half of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science and nanotechnology, open innovation. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. We've got a treat here in the second half hour. We're doing a repeat on a show we did earlier with Steve Smith. He's with the U.S. Small Business Administration. Steve is explaining why it is so important for the SBA to give proper funding to startups. And we think that this is an important enough that it needs to be rebroadcast. Of course, Steve and others are going to be speaking at the International Conference on Homeland Security Technologies May 10th, 11th, and 12th at the Westin Hotel in Waltham, Massachusetts. If you want to know more about that, go to our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a link. But now let's step over to our fountain of useless information we keep here on the fifth of today's query.
To the fountain of useless information, how can I help?
Yes, I see we have awakened the spirit of the fountain, who knows all, hears all, and sees all, and tells all. For a price, that's why we had to throw in the coins. Okay, oh spirit of the fountain, here is an easy one for you today. All right? Put on your thinking cap, or in this case, maybe your shower cap, I don't know. Which African capital city is located in the confluence of the White Nile and the Blue Nile rivers? Oh spirit of the fountain. African capital city located in the confluence of the White Nile and the Blue Nile rivers. Oh spirit of the fountain.
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell me.
Aha! The spirit of the fountain knows his geography. He even knows there is a White Nile and a Blue Nile rivers. The African capital located in the confluence of the White Nile and the Blue Nile rivers. If you said Cairo, of course you're wrong. No, it's Khartoum. Absolutely, Khartoum. All right, now, back to our program. Right now, we have on the line Stephen G. Smith, and you probably didn't know there was a Director of Disaster Planning and Risk Management for the U.S. Small Business Administration, but he is with us in the flesh. Welcome to the program, Steve.
Well, thank you very much, Colonel.
Now, I understand you're going to be a plenary speaker with some important things to say at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference. It's going on in Boston, Massachusetts, the 10th through the 12th. We're lucky to have you on the program. Give us a little preview of some of the things that you're going to want to kind of drive home to that audience.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and I also appreciate the opportunity to speak at the Homeland Security and Technology Conference. One of the things which I've just been absolutely passionate about working at SBA is one of my collateral duties, essentially, which is working with the Advanced Defense Technology Regional Innovation Clusters.
Mm-hmm.
And what a cluster is requires a little bit of explanation, because they're not all the same, and that's kind of by intent. As SBA has developed our cluster network, we've just looked for entities who can best do what we want without specifying exactly how to do it. So that's given us the options to look at different ideas and how different things can contribute to finding innovative technology, developing it, and commercializing it. So I kind of use the terminology, and I may use it repeatedly as we talk. We look at these groups and their ability to find innovative technology, filter it to find out what's really useful to the customer, and then facilitate its development. So you'll hear me talk about find, filter, facilitate quite often. And I'd really like to get the word out to as broad an audience as I can. about what the contribution of this network of clusters can do. But again, to go back to what I said about defining them, clusters can be, they can be incubators, they can be accelerators, some of them are just a little more than networking groups, but there's all different types of clusters. So when somebody says, hey, I'm dealing with a cluster, you need to probe a little bit deeper and figure out exactly what kind of cluster and what their capabilities are. And I just need to say that up front as I start talking about some of the marvelous capabilities the clusters we're working with have.
Now, these clusters are actually small businesses themselves who come to you for advice, or you get a hold of them and say, hey, look, I've got advice for you, or how are these clusters come together?
No, they're self-generated. That's a very good question, Colonel, because I'm often asked, well, can SBA set up a small business cluster in region X or city Y? Mm-hmm. And we don't establish clusters. Clusters establish themselves.
Okay.
And essentially we have, starting back in 2010, we have put out solicitations for clusters who can perform those fine filter facilitate functions well for small businesses. And we've been competitively awarding contracts to folks who we think who are best suited to meet those requirements and do that job and help the businesses, the most small businesses, and be most effective at doing it. And we're getting some really good results, and we're starting to slowly grow our network. And right now there's three defense-oriented regional innovation clusters, which are the ones that I primarily work with, but SBA overall now has 14 clusters. And the entire federal government actually has about 56 different clusters which get some degree of federal funding, which again emphasizes what I say about illustrating the differences between clusters. You have to kind of, open the hood and figure out exactly what you have with which particular cluster that you're working for.
So I guess what you're saying then is that the SBA, U.S. SBA, supports these clusters with financial incentives and that sort of thing. And you don't create the clusters. The clusters are brought to you because they kind of form naturally. People in a particular economic area or with certain economic ideas get to the SBA and say, hey, look, we've got these ideas collectively, and that means we're a cluster, and so can you give us a hand here because we want to do these things and get funded. Is that what I'm seeing here?
That's exactly right. That's a very good analysis, and I can tell you that I've been on the selection panel for, I guess, all but one of our round of cluster selections, and I've seen some extraordinarily talented groups. So many that I wish we could award more cluster awards to them. But they just have tremendous ability to help the small businesses out, do things which the small businesses can't do on them, for themselves. One of the things that we find, so now let me go back, step back a second. The cluster, the folks who run the clusters, in some cases they're nonprofits, in some cases they're for-profit small business, sometimes they're located at a college or a university. Sometimes they're not, and it's a very very diverse set of factors. The thing which is really most important, they're very small too. The thing which is most important is they have a core of usually just a few people who know their industry. They know their industry. They know the big businesses, the small businesses. They know what the technology is. They understand where the opportunities and potential are. And you have a lot of small businesses. And before I retired from the Navy, mm-hmm. after 34 years in the Navy, and then I was in small business and a little bit of large business for about 5 years before I joined SBA.
Okay.
And I really got to appreciate some of the challenges of running a small business. Your limited resources, the absolute necessity to be able to focus on what's important to your business. And the limitations on your ability to rapidly commercialize or bring something something to market, because you just don't, you simply don't have the resources to do it. So you may find a small business or even just a university researcher who doesn't have any care to commercialize his brilliant technology. Mm-hmm. And they have a great idea, but they don't know how to take that technology and apply it. They don't know how to apply it to satisfy the customer's needs. And I've seen small business technology where, with a little advice from some wise folks, just by changing the application of the technology, it suddenly becomes of great value to a number of different customers. There was no change in the technology itself at all. They just changed the application of how that technology was is being used. So that application of technology is just so vital to a small business success. So you have a small business and they have some technology, but they don't necessarily know how to apply the technology, for one, to get the best market value. Then they don't know how to, make a component. They don't know how to make a system. They don't know how to integrate it into something. And if you're dealing with, like the Department of Defense, Department of Defense typically doesn't want just a technology. They want a component, or mm-hmm. they want a system, or they want something which is going to solve a problem for them. And this is where the clusters can come in, because I'll give you an example. The San Diego Defense Technology Cluster, which is actually headquartered at San Diego State University Research Foundation.
Okay.
And they've been working with a group in San Diego called the CCAT, Center for the Commercialization of Advanced Technology, and they have like a 10-plus year record of working with thousands of small businesses, and they have thousands of small businesses in their database. And they essentially go through a vetting process with them and determine the applicability and the maturity of their technology. And then they can bring in investors, they can bring in entrepreneurs, they can bring in the necessary folks to help build that technology. They can also build teams. And in building teams, this is really important, because if you look at the large defense contractors, and I'm really largely focused on the defense industry, defense and homeland security industry. If you look at large contractors, they no longer have the resources to keep on staff the different skill sets and brain power which they've always used to have. So they have to find it. Now, every one of those big defense contractors or homeland security contractors wants to have a vetted supply chain of trusted, reliable businesses which can provide them with the products and the components and the technology which they need to satisfy the government's challenges which they put out in their RFPs. So that's a lot of legwork for those big companies to go out and search and vet and find that technology. And the small business clusters have the ability to do that for you. Essentially, they have the ability to find from a vast universe of small businesses. They can find that technology. They can then figure out which technology, filter the technology to figure out what it is which will actually satisfy the client's needs. And then they can facilitate the development of it by putting that small business together with the right team of other small businesses or large businesses, which can in fact then produce the components and the systems which the clients ultimately need. So it enables a small business to have success much more rapidly than it would otherwise have, and take some technology and really move it more quickly.
Well, this seems like a fascinating little web. I started to say network, but it's kind of a web, because what you're doing is you're drawing on the academics, the nonprofits, the small startups. You're introducing them to the larger defense contractors who are looking for a stream of suppliers to be able to come in and step in and to tackle any part of a problem at any given time. And you get to be kind of a central clearinghouse for that to happen. Now, how are you getting the word out for all this, Steve?
Well, I'm going to have to ask you to help me. I'm serious. I'm going to, just a personal comment here for anyone who happens to be listening to this. The Colonel and I did not rehearse his questions.
No.
You are absolutely right on the mark, and I use the term network.
Yeah.
And it is not the individual cluster. It's the network. And the thing which has gotten to, in the last 6 years, has grown to be extraordinarily good and powerful, is the clusters work together. The defense clusters, they fully collaborate with one another. They don't view each other as competitors. They view each other as collaborators. And the three defense clusters, each one of them has a very important partner or subcontractor, because they do have some subcontractors that work for them with the funding that SBA gives them. And the San Diego cluster, which is the oldest and most mature, has the Center for Commercialization of Advanced Technology in San Diego, and that's their partner with like years of experience in doing these things. And the Huntsville cluster, is partnered with a commercial group called Go to Market Solutions, and Go to Market has the ability to scrub the internet and find vast amounts of information. And you know that not everything you find on the internet is true, but they have ways of filtering that and filtering things out and basically necking it down to a manageable thing that can be looked at by the cluster leadership in the Huntsville cluster. And then the cluster up in Minneapolis, the Minnesota Defense Alliance, they're actually part of a small business in Minneapolis, and their partner is a group at Montana State University called TechLink. And TechLink has a particular individual there who has the best success rate of taking technology to SBIR phase through that I've ever heard of. He's got like an 80% success rate, which is extraordinary. He's won the SBA Tibbetts Award before for excelling in this field. So those six entities and those three defense clusters, they work and collaborate very closely together, and they are really good at finding things. And I can give you a couple of examples of some of the technology which they've come up with.
Oh yeah, please.
Well, a couple of my favorites. There was one with the Minnesota Defense Cluster, and they came up with a power chip. Mm-hmm. The power chip is from a company in Fargo, North Dakota.
Okay.
And everybody says, it's a small business in Fargo, North Dakota. What can they know about anything?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had this power chip, which I was very interested in. I used to be an engineer on a ship one time, and I wanted to know how the thing worked. It's about the size of your pinky nail, and it weighs about two grams.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me it can go into any voltage regulator.
Oh.
And in electronic components, it can increase battery life in electronic components by up to 67%. And I said, wow, that's astounding. And they say, well, it can also reduce power consumption by anywhere from 10 to 40%.
Was it a resistor of some sort?
Well, it's a power manager. And basically what it does is a lot of things, like when you plug your charger in, the little blue light stays on forever even after you unplug the thing.
Yeah.
Basically the power is always there, and what this power chip does is power manager. It provides the amount of power which is required, the instant the power is required, for exactly the period of time the power is required, and then it shuts down. So it just conserves tremendous amounts of power.
So it's a sensitive switch is what it is then.
Oh, it really is, and I don't know the technology well enough, but I asked to have the CEO of the company come explain it to me, and he's also the guy who designed it.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought it in, and he showed me the chip, which is, and the self is not particularly physically impressive, but he describes it. And then as he's getting ready to leave, he says, "And oh, by the way, we won the Aviation Week in Space Technology Game-Changing Innovation of the Year for 2012. So I'm impressed. And I said, "Well, why didn't you tell me that when you walked in?" He says, "Well, you said you wanted to understand how it worked. You didn't ask me to, you know, to market it."
Mm.
And so, you know, we've been working with them for a while. They've been thoroughly vetted by Intel. But one of the challenges we have with working with big government agencies and DOD and other folks is getting the word across the different programs that this chip works. Now, I'm always very cautious about recommending something to my former friends in DOD from my long service there.
Well, yeah.
Because if I recommend something and it turns out that it's a dog, it's going to be embarrassing, and you know, people are very cautious about stuff like that. And I figured that, well, if Intel has thoroughly vetted this, it must be pretty good. So I don't hesitate on this particular one. And then there was another one, and this was just a very circumstantial. I was watching television on a weekend, and I saw, this was during the Ebola crisis, and one of the things I do with risk management and disaster planning is I work with the federal interagency and the NSC staff on you know, government planning to respond to things like that. So I was kind of in the loop on some of the Ebola planning stuff, even though SBA had almost nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
But I'm watching on the television these folks who are caring for Ebola patients, and they're wearing this protective gear, and it looks like the suits that we used to wear in the military, the ChemBio stuff, and the MOP gear, and that's a military term. It means mission-oriented protective posture.
Mm-hmm.
And these are basically rubber suits, and they are extremely hot. They're extremely humid. You are practically in any type of hot environment. You are dysfunctional working in one of those suits for any period of time.
Yeah, that's what I understand from seeing them on TV myself, yes.
Yeah, so I say, well, there's got to be something better than that. So I asked the defense clusters, can you find me anything better than that? So the folks in Huntsville and the go-to-market folks then, they found me a company in 8 hours that had a lightweight, breathable suit. I've seen some of the material on this stuff. It actually meets the specifications for the size of the pathogen and stuff. Won't pass through it into the individual.
That was my next question, you know.
Yeah.
And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
When DHS was stood up, and there was certainly a lot of money in the early days of the department, thought it was going to be sort of another Department of Defense-type organization, huge cash cow. That's not panned out to be the case. But there still are, you know, budgets supporting technology development and acquisition. They desperately need latest and greatest innovative technologies that help them do their job, you know, better, faster, and less expensively. And they're really looking for innovative ways of doing acquiring innovative technologies. And so, while they may not have the deep pockets like the Department of Defense has to say that they don't have or never spend money, the people saying that simply aren't looking at what's being spent and how it's being spent. My name is Andrea Marsh, and I am the Business Development Manager for Battelle, focusing on homeland security and critical infrastructure security programs.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.